The Red Eye Radio podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley as we begin a Thursday. Gary, how in the heck are you?
I'm doing really good because the best thing is over the last couple of years, everybody and his mother has analyzed Trump a billion ways over, right?
Yes, definitely.
Now the best, and you and I talked about this a few months back. We said one of the best things now is we get to look at 20 other people and their ideas.
That's
well, actually
right.
24 others, but we're only really paying attention to like 20 of them. Well, maybe five
maybe
of them.
Maybe five of them.
No, I'd say good, maybe seven or eight.
Okay, seven or eight.
And we do throw an occasional one in at this.
More than 10.
This point, but I thought it was interesting. Number one, a lot of the analysis on Trump's speech yesterday, and I still go back to what we said. I was even reading the Wall Street Journal. He's going to have to add more than this. He went back in time.
Yeah.
You need to go forward in time. And this is Trump in one speech. He's going to do 150 before you get there, and he's never been one to sit there and lay out everything the way that everybody wishes that he lays things out. I think that inside the campaign, they know that, for example, if he wants to win the election, he can solidify his base maybe by bringing up Hillary, but independents don't care.
No, they don't.
They don't care. No, most people don't care. Hillary's gone. She's not a part of the election.
Right.
But for him to mention it last night, no big deal because he's talking to his base. And so I really look at, and you know, you and I analyzed, and by the way, I'll talk about this in a little bit because I got into a couple of email discussions on people that said, well, you know, we think it is the best economy ever. And so and by the way, all great people that we had economic arguments back and forth.
And we all want the same thing. I'm sure when we have arguments with folks like that, we all want the same thing. So
But we'll get to it because and they acknowledged, they said, okay, you've got a point. And I said, you know, it's, and when you try, by the way, when you try to judge an economy, we'll get into the specifics in a moment. I don't want to get off the my mind is just scatterbrained today because there's so much stuff going on. But as we have stated before, there really isn't one statistic that can tell you how an economy is doing. You can take, as we have said before, maybe seven or eight, and then you get a much better idea of where it's going. So we'll get to that here in just a little bit. But I'm laughing yesterday because I got up and I had a visit a great friend of mine because her daughter is one year old.
Okay.
And so, I mean, I woke up and, you know, she had already texted me. We're ready. I'm like, okay, and it was out of bed, into the shower, went over, had a mini, because it's just me, but a mini birthday party with the 1 year old. Oh man, just amazing. 1 year olds are just amazing, I have to tell you, and this child especially, but every child is special to everybody, but this child to me is just, I consider myself like an uncle, an unofficial uncle, and
not creepy like Uncle Joe.
not creepy like Uncle Joe. And so by the time I finished and got back home, it was 2:30.
Right.
And so I got back home, and I sat on the couch for till 5 o'clock. I never moved. I mean, I walked in the house and sat down.
Right.
There is rarely a day where I take maybe a 3 hour span and don't pay attention to the news at all.
Right.
I mean, that's a rarity.
Sure.
But a 1 year old child gets your attention.
Sure.
So.
Yes.
I wish you could have seen me. I'm just chuckling because I'm reading all the Biden gaffes already. And I'm like, anything Trump said is history now. Wow, this is new. This is Biden, and the gaffes are now starting where he clearly does not understand where the Democrat Party has gone.
Right.
At least, for a day he did not.
Right, right. Because, or doesn't care, but I think he's just clueless.
Well, did he know that that as a Democrat you can't come out, as he told the you know, many of the people in the fundraiser that were very well off and said, I'm not going to demonize wealth.
Right.
I'm not going to demonize wealth. You're just as patriotic as anybody else, and things aren't going to change for you, meaning things under my presidency aren't going to change for the rich at all.
Which means he's not going to raise taxes like he said he was going to do just a few days ago.
Yeah, so I burst out laughing. I mean, I'm not even taking this seriously. I burst out laughing, thinking to myself, you know, you can't say that. And then he defends the comment that he made that, when he worked with segregationist senators, it was a sign of civility. And that one, I read the demonized wealth first and then the segregationist senator comment next, and I just lost it. I mean, yeah, I'm just rolling laughing saying this is just pure greatness.
Yeah, yeah.
This is going to be, it's going to be so much fun.
Well, and we're not even to our first debate even.
No, we're not.
You know, this is the beautiful thing about it is that the debate is yet to be had, and you know it's coming at him. You said it. You said, look, the idea will be that on that stage that he's on, the rest of them will essentially be going at him. He's the target. You go for number one. You tear that down. You probably throw a few soft hits at Bernie. I don't know if that's going to happen or not. And then Warren, I mean, you're going to, you know, you're going to go in order of who's on top of the polls right now. And you do that for a reason. But we said, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, I think probably when we were talking about this, targeting Biden, well, sometimes you just let him go. You just let him talk. You know, sometimes you just let him answer the questions on whatever it is, realizing there's a pretty good chance he's going to do the damage himself. You know, what's interesting is that you mentioned it a minute ago, you know, going back to 2016, Hillary, okay, she was the big bad, as they call it in Hollywood. In other words, you know, the bad guy, the villain, whatever it is, according to his base, right? So she's the big bad, and that was a pretty big bad. It really was, if you think about it. She'd be perfect. Her character would be perfect in one of those Hollywood movies. Apparently not drawing many people to the live play version of it. But in 2020, or really it's now, but I mean going into that election cycle, the big bad is the crazy Democrat. We go back to the Claire McCaskill ad, but it's collectively the crazy Democrat, which I think is bigger, it's wider, because it's not, if you think about the targeting of this president and everything that's going on, it really is about the one guy. It is about the one person, which is to say, okay, great, you defeat him, then what? Well, we know the next guy is going to be Hitler. Then the rest of them are Hitler, and we know they take shots at everybody else, but right now it's about the one guy. Right. In 2016 with Hillary, it really was about, you know, those of us who opposed her, it was about, you know, making sure she didn't get elected for very good reason. But there's something different, I think, when you talk about the wider group of the far left Democrats that are leading the party and that dictate that you can't say things like what Biden said today, and either of those aren't going to work with the far left and get you through to the primary without being answered by a ton of heckling and pushback. That's something that we've been pointing out, that if you're going to, and I think it works for the president, that if you're going to have a great opposition, in a positioning of that opposition right now, you've got a great opportunity, as we've been saying in recent days, to point out, look, this is what they want to do. This is what they want to do. And collectively brand them as the group that they are. And I think that will work to a large extent. The rest of it really is about the economy for the president.
It's about the economy. It's about health care. It's about, and so I do agree that he has to address, and he claims he is going to address health care here in the next couple of weeks. I mean, some of the criticism of the president, well, he didn't address health care in the speech. Yeah, but he did a couple of days earlier saying that he's going to, that his plan will come out, which I think is necessary if you're going to win in 2020. Now, it's got to be the health care plan in the direction where he has been going, which is to open the markets more, have more transparency, actually promote more free market solutions and government solutions. But I just, you know, I thought yesterday when you had AOC doubling down on her concentration camp remarks, where you actually now have Democrats saying, you need to shut up. You know, you need to be quiet. You're doubling down, tripling down now that a detention center or the border of the United States is somehow like the Nazi concentration camp. Your attempt, and she's doubling and tripling down on it as a, no, I'm accurate on it. No, I'm accurate. No, you're not. And you look like an idiot. And so with that, and then Biden, and the funniest thing is I think Biden, because one of his responses was, come on, when I talk about working with segregationist senators as civility and how to work, you know, with other people, you know what I mean.
You know what I mean.
And when he said that,
No, we don't.
Do you know the party that you're in right now? Do you understand?
No, we don't know what you mean. You know, and there it is. It's not that all of them are making gaffes. It's the mentality that is a common thread with all of them, which is why I said that the, you know, having that kind of opposition is easy to position with your base, help grow your base for the president, because it's not, that mentality isn't exclusive to one person. The gaffes with Biden, him learning or maybe not learning that he can't get away with that with the far left that is leading the party right now is making my point that, and you're not going, and while AOC is the face of it, that mentality lives even beyond an AOC. And well, I think that's, you know, like with Hillary, defeating Hillary, okay, great. There were still the crazy Democrats, but it was all about the one person. In this case, it's about the mentality that is a common thread in the far left right now.
What I started thinking about this yesterday, will AOC go so far that you will have certain candidates that don't want her endorsement?
Yes, I think so.
Because the endorsement will be the endorsement will be really big January or February if they, and as we said just a few weeks ago, a few days ago, she is the most coveted endorsement. She's really the only endorsement that the majority of Democratic presidential candidates want, which shows you how far left and wacko, or as Claire McCaskill would say, how crazy the Democrats are. And it's everything, well, the majority of it is the issues that they're behind. I just saw the headline, it was probably on Fox News, but Greg Gutfeld saying that what's really confusing the Democrats, and it's what we've always said, is Trump on the issues is really moderate. And not, you know, there are some, you know, there are some things that he is, and by the way, his great successes have been more conservative. If you look at it, the great successes that he has have really been a significant portion of them have been fiscally conservative, morally conservative with the judges. Those are, have actually been the biggest successes that he has had when he tends to go the opposite direction.
Superseding the later successes, or I guess the any of the successes in the later years of the Republican Party here. I mean, I think I think those successes that he's had in some regards, I mean, being able to get the I know the Republicans did that and they had to pass that, but 21% corporate tax rates, but like you said, judges and everything else, those aren't small things, and that's a huge deal for any Republican president.
So coming up, we'll talk more about that. The Fed keeps the rates the same, but indicates they may drop them.
Yeah,
worried about the economy right now. And they made that clear yesterday. Trump tells Fox News that the Department of Justice is looking into whether his phone calls were monitored. Hope Hicks testifies college students overestimate how much they can make after graduation. I like that one. This is my favorite. Americans hate morning, morning time, but we'll delay that till about 4 a.m.
Okay, good.
Americans hate getting up in the morning.
Yeah, for our loyal listeners that get up with us, you know, and set their alarm for 4 a.m.
Exactly.
We'll delay
that story here, and we'll tell you about the county clerk that will not hand out licenses to illegals in New York.
Hmm.
From the county that I was born in.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
And we talked about the polling on that, and the majority of people in New York are against it.
Right.
And you saw the millennials are against it. And as we said, that's a perfect thing that Trump and the Republicans have to hit upon. And by the way, they haven't.
No, they haven't.
They should have been all over the fact that driver's licenses in New York, and brought up that polling and pounded that in the national media.
Yep.
And I've said this, and we'll probably continue to say it. I hope we don't say it. I hope it isn't fatal for 2020, but they still suck at communicating.
Yep.
A message.
Look at the opportunities. The late term abortion thing in New York, and celebrating it afterward. Licenses, the health care for illegals, all these things that you could. New York State could be your poster child for the opposition, and nothing. Crickets.
You see that, Cuomo? No celebratory signing of the illegal, licenses for legal immigrants, because he knows the majority of New Yorkers are against it.
Yeah, but you can't hide it, Governor.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Hurley, 866-90-RED-EYE. Also, the reparation hearings yesterday, reparations.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to go anywhere.
No.
The majority of Americans, vast majority of Americans are against it. In the United States, you pay victims.
Right, directly.
You pay victims directly, right? Mm-hmm. So whether, the Democrats, if that's the path that they're going down, and we think about it, if it's climate change, if it's race, if it's reparations, if it's boys can play girls sports, it is up to the Republicans to point out that that is not the agenda of the American public.
Right. Right.
And it's not hard to do.
Right.
Because as Claire McCaskill found out last year, there's a significant portion of independents who believe that the crazy Democrats are gaining more control of the Democrat Party, mm-hmm. and they don't want that.
No.
It's not crazy Democrat. Because you will have Democrats, or you'll have some independents say, Trump is just, I don't want him because he's too mean. That's one person.
Right.
The Democrat Party, it's the entire party.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's where they stand on the issues. And on the issues, Trump is a moderate.
For Travel Centers of America, here is your forecast.
Throughout most of the week, east of the Mississippi, we've seen showers, scattered thunderstorms, or showers connected with a frontal boundary. Rains will continue today from the lower Ohio Valley up into the Midwest and Northeast. Places like Knoxville, Tennessee, will start drying out later today, and that system will move on to the Northeast as the weekend approaches. Louisville, Cincinnati, Indianapolis, Columbus, Ohio, all set for showers today. Out west, things are dry, as is the desert Southwest and Southern Plains. This is the last Thursday of spring 2019. So we've got a lot of spring showers for areas that have seen their share this week. Look for the risk of severe weather for the Carolinas, northern Georgia, including Atlanta, and most of PA, including the PA Turnpike throughout the day, where the risk of severe weather is probable. There's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Young, fresh, hip, and cool. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on the new Red Eye Radio.
I'm sorry.
Wait.
I just always love that. By the way, I had some great email discussions yesterday on a comment that we made yesterday where the president said this may be the best economy ever in the history of the country.
Right.
And we said, no, it's not. It's good, but it's not the best the country has seen. And you know, and we'll pin into it in just a couple of moments. And got this is just one email that's indicative of a number of emails that I received yesterday that we had the discussion.
All right.
Here's one. Have a different take on Trump's statement about the best economy in the history of the country. Quote, more Americans with jobs ever before in history, larger numbers than 30 years ago. Lowest unemployment in history for women, black, Hispanic, Asian, for non-high school and high school graduates, more jobs than people can fill them. GDP up to levels Obama said were impossible. So I addressed each one of them. More Americans with jobs ever before in history. Well, that's always going to happen because, of course, we have more people employed than 30 years ago because we have 100 million more people in the country.
Right.
The population is 100 million higher. When you look at the GDP, if you're looking at just the GDP and what it is for that particular year, every president has the best economy ever. Mm-hmm. Obama had the best economy ever because the GDP went up to rates never seen before. Because we keep getting a bigger economy year in and year out. It is the growth, the rate of growth of that economy that we look at as whether an economy is successful or not. And so Obama, you look at it here. When Obama took office, the GDP, the total GDP was $15.6 trillion. By the time that he left office, it was $17.6 trillion, the highest in history.
Right. Yeah.
And... then when Trump came in, it went up that it's the rate of growth. The other point is, let me hit the other one here because here we go. Lowest unemployment in history for women, blacks, Hispanic. That's the unemployment rate. The unemployment rate is the number of people that are seeking work. A number that we view, and so do economists, as even more important than that, is the labor participation rate. Mm. And that is the number of people that are working, the percentage of people that are working as compared, you know, to adults that can be in the labor force, the number of people that are working as opposed to the number of people that can work but do not. Unemployment is different. Unemployment is those people that choose not to be in the workforce for whatever reason. And there's a number of reasons. The labor participation rate is still lower today than it was in 1984 because we made the whole point. That was, we look back at 1984 and we looked at the growth rate of 7.2% after the Reagan tax cuts. In 84, where the president had 2.9%. Now, I can go to a ton of other years where the GDP growth rate is more than 2.9%.
Right.
We looked at that because in modern history, if you look at the last 30 years, you look at that, and that's still the best growth rate that we've had in 1 year, 7.2%. Now, the other way that you have to look at it, besides looking at just the money, is one of the figures I've always looked at is the GDP per capita. And that's per person, how high has the GDP gone up per person.
Mm.
And in 1984, it was 6.2%. Last year, 2.2%.
Mm-hmm.
So the GDP is not the be-all, end-all, because you can go through history and you can see, for example, World War II, the GDP skyrocketed. But we weren't producing goods and we were producing goods and services,
mm-hmm.
but they weren't being used. They were being used by the government for wartime. They weren't being used to make the private sector economy more productive and more efficient and people's lives more productive and more efficient. We've always viewed that that type of spending should be viewed differently than government spending. One of the reasons that we have said the president wants the infrastructure program and talked about $2 trillion is he understands the GDP, and he understands that you can artificially push it up.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the GDP during the last 4 years of Clinton, and you'll see everyone is over 4%. But that was based on what? Was that based on just goods and services being produced, durable goods and services being produced? No, it was based on the dot-com bubble.
Right.
Where the
not an expansion of wealth necessarily.
Not an expansion of wealth necessarily, but tremendous billions, trillions of dollars invested into a entire industry where there was never a return on that particular investment.
Yeah.
So the money invested counted as, you know, GDP. And yes, that money invested did put people to work.
Sure.
But it did not create more efficiency and more productivity in the private sector. Therefore, I don't look at it as the same. So,
yeah, it was a stagnated expansion. In other words, the money only went so far when it comes to the investment. We've talked about this, and they changed how they calculate the GDP. The formula changed several years ago.
Yes, I also have done that, yes.
And more emphasis was given in that direction, and we took issue with it then. The point being is that investment doesn't necessarily mean beyond investment that you're going to have greater expansion of that wealth. In other words, the technology innovation, like a smartphone coming about years ago, and when it did, the expansion of wealth because of the demand for the product, it grew and grew and grew, and the expansion of wealth continued. If you're talking about any industry or corporation that invests into the future, they're investing in equipment, even investing in people, they're hiring and they're investing in resources, and they make deals with maybe other companies and vendors and everything else. If it doesn't lead to something, if that product or service does not continue, that line does not continue, that supply chain does not continue and grow based on the consumer demand of it, then that is not a true and lasting expansion of wealth. It's limited. And I think this is, you know, one of the faults. I understand what they were trying to do, but keep in mind who's doing it. I don't care if it's Obama. I don't care if it's, you know, Clinton or Carter or Trump. It's if it is not something where there is a true expansion of wealth, that's what you look at. You look at this is who we are as a nation. I mean, you know, if you think about why they came here, they wanted to they thought that, you know, from the soil they were going to get all these things, anything from jewels or anything else that would be this, again, great expansion of wealth. Well, eventually we got to it. Some guy poked a hole in the ground in Pennsylvania and we were off, right? And so now there's where we are energy-wise, and then the technology and innovation that came along with it. I mean, if you think about all the efficiencies created with technology along the way, flight to anything and everything that improved not only the efficiency but also the health of a society, all of that was real and lasting expansion of wealth. That's what you're looking for. At least that's what we're looking for. There is a necessary role when it comes to, we believe, and the Constitution says it, the necessary role of the federal government when it comes to spending on military and everything else. However, that's different than the GDP, and also we believe investment, whether it's private investment or otherwise, we believe should have an asterisk next to it,
right?
Because it doesn't represent necessarily at that point an expansion of wealth. It can lead to it, but it doesn't at the beginning.
If you know, again, so you've got to take these all into consideration, and including, for example, the durable goods.
Mm-hmm.
Durable goods are actually things that, you know, they're durable. We make them.
Right. Yes.
And then you have the services, but services are also critically important because services you can look at and you can say, well, a service makes my business more efficient and productive to make the durable good.
Right.
And so that's the problem when you look at an economy. Mm-hmm. But what we use as that factor is the GDP or the GDP per capita, because then you take into consideration the actual size of the country, and it's what you're producing per person that can actually show what your strength is. But to sit there and say, well, Trump's GDP is higher than Obama's. Well, Obama's was higher than Bush's, and Bush's was, because the GDP is always going up,
right.
But it is the rate of growth that we look at.
Right, exactly. And that represents the expansion, or at least in part represents that expansion and what you're doing, because that's part of, if you think about it, it is for the productivity collectively as a whole, for our nation, that is a representation of that expansion or that greater efficiency. And we've talked about it. You talked about it years ago. You mentioned how the American worker creates more wealth per capita than any other worker on the planet. You can talk about cheap labor and everything else, and we know that plays into it, certainly. And we do compete with emerging markets right now because more and more people in those emerging markets, Asia, are going to work. They're becoming, you know, they're moving, their wages are going up. And the American worker, because we're a global, it is a global economy, like it or not, and we can have that debate another time, but it is, the American worker competes with those workers, even if it's not the same industry or job. It's just the fact that other people are willing to do certain jobs, and that's kind of how that works on wages. So hopefully the president we won't have to get to the point where, and I don't think infrastructure is going to happen. I mean, it's not going to happen before January of 2021.
I don't see it happening.
But hopefully we'll get to the point where the deal with China is done. The tariffs are off the table. We reestablish those trade routes. We quit talking about tariffs. The markets settle. The trade partners settle. And for the president more specifically, his voter base settles into the fact that he is the best choice in 2020.
So I just want to make sure that I cover this completely. The unemployment, of course, the unemployment rate, as we have seen it go down, we've seen economic activity go up.
Yes.
So the unemployment rate, or the number of people employed, the more is also an indicator that your economy can be successful. But that in itself is not the prime indicator when you talk employment numbers. One of the most important numbers is the actual, and that's why you hear people talk about it. It is the actual, what do they call it? The labor indicator. I just forgot that I can't think of the participation rate, the labor rate, which right now is about 62.3% of people, of adults that can work.
Mm-hmm.
They may not wish to work, but it's the ones, it's the 62.3%. Back in 1984, it was close to 65%.
Mm-hmm.
So you had more adults who could work working in 1984 than you do now. The unemployment rate is people who choose to work or not to work and have to fit a, you know, particular, for example, if you're off unemployment, you can be kicked off that role. Even if you're actively looking at that point, mm-hmm. some people get lost in the shuffle because you're off unemployment. So those numbers are tough to do. So what you do is you look and say, all right, that's why the labor participation rate is so critical. They look at it and they said, okay, even though the economy is doing good and we're at roughly 3%, 2.9%, the labor participation rate still is lower than a lot of economists would like to see. They'd like to see it up to 64%, 65%, because then that's really an indication that salaries have gone up, the demand is so great in industry and business that it takes people that were not, you know, that are sitting on the sidelines and weren't actively looking for work, it pulls them into the market.
Right. Yep.
So just a little bit, and thanks so much, because we had some great discussion on it yesterday, and I do appreciate it.
And all, clearly, we all want the same thing.
We all want the same thing.
Yes.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. You know why the Depression is called the Depression, though, because I got the GDP chart here by the year, and you look at 1930, minus 8.5%.
Wow.
Negative growth. Mm-hmm. 31, minus 6.4%. 32, minus 13%. Those numbers are sort of unimaginable. When you look at the recession, that was a depression. When you look at recession numbers here from 2008, in 2009, we had 0.1% negative growth in 2008 and minus 2.5% in 2009. And you saw that kind of effect. Could you imagine?
Oh, my gosh.
The depression and what kind of effect that had when you just look at those numbers?
Mm.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and the world, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour brought to you by Freightliner. Run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
And we say the world because you can podcast, you can stream, you can do a whole bunch of things.
Yeah.
Get our Red Eye Radio app. Android,
please.
Apple.
Yeah. Thank you, podcasters. Yes. Thank you, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Greatly appreciate it being there for us every single day. By the way, feel free to reach out. I mean, you know, you can, if you want to write us an email during the day. I mean, we may not be in the studio, but you and I are always... corresponding, and we try and get back to everybody, but just say hi. If you want to say, hey, I listen to your podcast every day while I'm working, while I'm doing whatever.
Then so if you're listening, if you're listening to us right now in the future.
Yes, which is exactly how it happens.
Which would be in the past.
We are talking to you from the past.
Yes.
Possibly hours ago. It could be days ago. We are talking, we are reaching into the future to communicate with people.
We're time travelers.
Well, it's like one of those, what do they call it? The box that they bury, the time capsule box.
Time capsule.
So it's like, kind of like that, except we're kind of smarmy and a bit creepy.
Okay, now you're, what was it? No, it wasn't. What was the movie with the time capsule?
I don't know.
Remember the aliens and the time capsule? And
yeah. But remember, too...
was it John Cusack was in it, right?
Right, yeah.
That wasn't Knowing. No, Knowing was the other one.
Knowing was weird. It was weird, man. It was just weird. That's when... I don't know if that's when Nick Cage jumped the shark, but it was somewhere around that time. Then Brendan Fraser, remember the comedy where he... Christopher Walken was his dad, and they moved under into the underground shelter and
that was dumb.
Stayed there. Yeah, yeah. I thought it was kind of funny just because of the... I think they were kind of making fun of that era and then taking it, of course, to its limit, coming above ground. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. We thank you to the people of the future.
So, I will say this.
Okay.
If there was a Republican candidate for president of the United States that had the history of Joe Biden and then said what he has said in the last day and a half and then defended it, they could no longer run for president of the United States. Trump is called a racist without any indication in his history that he's ever been a racist or hung around with racists.
Mm-hmm.
When you read... For example, and in case you haven't heard it, former Vice President Joe Biden on Wednesday dismissed calls to apologize for invoking his working relationship with two segregationist senators as an example of civility. Asked by a reporter outside a fundraiser in Maryland whether he'd apologize for his Tuesday remarks, a Democratic presidential candidate responded, "Apologize for what? He knows better, Biden said, referring to Senator Cory Booker's call to apologize for the remarks. There's not a racist bone in my body. I've been involved in civil rights my whole career. Well, when you read, the National Review just, I mean, just went, just covered the entire thing. Said, in the political culture, increasingly focused on past sins about racial and gender equality, Biden has long been sitting on a time bomb. His many enduring friendships and alliances with segregationist Dixiecrats, and by segregationist, I don't mean not totally on board with the progressive agenda circa 2019. I mean the real deal. Signers of the pro-Jim Crow Southern Manifesto, massive resistance, bitter enders, raisers of the Confederate flag on public property, you name it. The Senate Democratic Caucus Joe Biden joined in 1973 was headed by a former Klansman with notorious segregationist running virtually all the major committees. These men became Biden's mentors and friends, and he had nothing but glowing words for them in his entire career. Tuesday night at a fundraiser in New York, Biden lit the fuse on that bomb. As Jack Crow writes in National Review, Biden went on to praise Democratic Senators James Eastland of Mississippi and Herman Talmadge of Georgia, both who steadfastly opposed racial integration and federal civil rights protections. Biden said, I was in the caucus with James Eastland, Mr. Biden said, slipping briefly into a Southern accent, according to the Poole report.
Huh.
He never called me boy. He always called me son. And guess what? At least there was some civility. We got things done. We didn't agree on much of anything, but we got things done. We got it finished. But today you look at the other side and you're the enemy, not the opposition, the enemy. We don't talk to each other anymore. Wow.
Wow.
This is far from an isolated incident. In 2017, at an Alabama rally for Doug Jones, Biden elaborated, I've been around a long time. I worked with James Eastland. Even in the days when I got there, the Democratic Party still had seven or eight old-fashioned Democrat segregationist, you'd get up and you'd argue like the devil with them, and then you'd go down and have lunch or dinner together.
Okay.
The political system worked. We were divided on the issues, but the political system worked. Wow.
Yeah.
In 2016, he talked up his friendship with Eastland. When Biden faced a re-election in 1978, Eastland offered to help Biden's Senate campaign. I looked at Eastland and said, what can old Jim Eastland do for you in Delaware? Biden recounted at a 2016 Labor Day event in Pittsburgh. I said, Mr. Chairman, some places you'd help and some places you'd hurt. He said, well, I'll come up to Delaware and campaign for you or against you, whichever will help you the most. As Katie Gluck of the New York Times notes, Eastland and Talmadge were totally unreconstructed defenders of Jim Crow and unabashed defenders of white supremacy. Eastland maintained to the end that he had no regrets. Mr. Eastland, a plantation owner, was known as an opponent of integration efforts and a staunch critic of the civil rights movement, which he sometimes dismissed as the work of communists. Throughout his career, he referred to African Americans as member of an inferior race. Mr. Talmadge was also a critic of the civil rights movement, opposed the 1954 Supreme Court decision, Brown versus the Board of Education, and declared racially segregated public schools unconstitutional. Talmadge's response to the Brown decision, there aren't enough troops in the whole United States to make white people of this state send their children to school with colored children, end of quote. That was a quote, so you know. That's why I started out this whole thing stating if this was a Republican candidate, they could no longer run for president of the United States.
Yeah, it'd be over. If Trump had said that, they would stop the presses.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So what I wondered during the day as this was all unfolding, creepy gate, even post hashtag me too, didn't do anything. In fact, his poll numbers went up. Biden's poll numbers went up after that thing, which was, I don't know, lasted for a week, essentially. Does this slide?
It stays in the news now because he won't apologize.
Right.
So we the cycle continues for another day. And so will he eventually have to apologize? Or when the AOC wing views this and totally digests it, how will they respond?
Right. Well, I think it's apparent that she will not endorse him, right? That wing will never endorse him. But even further, if she goes after him and there's no apology or walking it back or whatever is going to be done, then yeah, it's lasting damage. I'm just curious to see how much Biden can get away with, on what levels.
Biden has faced mounting backlash in the past 24 hours. This is from thehill.com, invoking those senators during a speech. Democratic candidates such as Booker, who was black, and Senator Bernie Sanders demanded Biden apologize for the comment. "You don't joke about calling black men boys," Booker said in a statement. "Men like James Eastland use words like that and the racist policies that accompany them to perpetuate white supremacy and strip black Americans of our very humanity. I have to tell Vice President Biden, as someone I respect, that he is wrong for using his relationships with Eastland and Talmadge as an example of how to bring the country together." Because what he's saying is, Biden, think about this, Biden is saying, the way to bring the country together is the way that I used to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You may disagree with the racists, but you sit down and you build relationships with them.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. That doesn't cut it in 2019. In any party, it doesn't cut it.
No.
Because in the Republican, actually, it's more accepted than the Democrat Party if there isn't universal outrage on this by today.
No, that's a great point.
Because there would be, because you know, if this was Trump, you know as well as I do, it would be, and he was a candidate, it would be over.
Yeah.
The talk over the next couple of days would be the fact that there needs to be a push to get Trump out of running for the presidency, that he can't be the president. It would be Republicans would be discussing it, would be discussed on Fox News on a consistent basis. Let's see if the Democrats confront this or attempt to bury it. And by the way, we had said this, that his past of associating with so many of the Democrat senators from the Jim Crow era, we said this is eventually going to come back and bite him in the butt.
Right.
I didn't know it was going to bite him because he was promoting it and his relationship as a good thing.
Right. It would be the history basically that comes back. He answers by saying, listen, this was a horrible time in the history of our nation, and certainly I don't condone the behavior or words or thoughts by those individuals. And then you try and move on. But essentially saying, well, no, we got things done. Well, okay. Yeah, wrong answer. You're not moving on to the bonus round. But again, throughout the day, I'm wondering, I'm thinking, okay, how far can Joe go before he's done? Before they decide he's done? Before it's over? You know, here's the thing about Creepygate. It is different. And with this, we knew about it. People knew about it. I don't know how many young people knew about it, but the history of Biden has been very, I mean, we're very aware of it and have been for a long time. So Creepygate was, I mean, he was doing that on camera. I mean, you know, sniffing people's hair and leaning in and whispering into their ears. So creepy. But it is it is different in how you respond. Even with Creepygate, it was like, yeah, well, I'm sorry if I ever offended anybody. I didn't really mean to. And, of course, he had the endorsement of Whoopi to continue that kind of behavior. So that wasn't
wait
going
a minute.
Away. Oh.
So you need the coveted AOC endorsement or the Whoopi endorsement?
Here's what I want to know. Hey, Whoopi, what do you think about this?
Oh, yeah, good point.
Like I'm waiting for her response.
that was like, that moment of silence. Yeah. We were expecting her to interject.
Yeah, well, because I'm thinking, will she respond on the, and then I thought, why are you wondering about that? You don't even care.
Yeah, I thought it. But we're both sat there looking.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Meghan McCain might bring it up. Is she even on the? Has she been on the panel recently?
She tweeted the other day though that they're going to go. I think she said she's going back to Arizona in August for their break. I don't know. I guess they don't do live shows.
Okay. I heard she was out for a couple of days or something last week.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I really don't watch it. I mean.
I don't either. I follow her on Twitter, but apparently she was going back, and it was. I think she said it was the first time she'd been back since her father's death. Or it was something related to her father.
Yeah, I don't normally catch The View. I think Married with Children repeats around at that point.
Yeah, well, if I wanted to watch, a bunch of people, making a lot of noise, wearing too much makeup and big hair, I'd go to a Kiss concert.
I have no idea whether Married with Children is on at that time.
I don't know.
I'm probably normally still sleeping or just getting awake and drinking coffee. But and there's not too much intellectual stimulation that really comes from that show.
Exactly.
But the whole Biden thing, seriously, when you think about it, if this was Trump, if this was Trump in 2016, he'd be done.
Yep. Yep.
And he's still called racist, Hitler, now the Hitler's coming back because of AOC and the whole concentration camp. Well, you've got more evidence of Joe Biden being a racist than anything Donald Trump has said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Way more ammunition here.
Well, and again, the positioning of your opposition for the president, and this would be my advice, it's very easy. Just do it.
Right. Because really you don't. There is no evidence of Trump being a racist.
Right. And, sleepy Biden, we understand the names and everything else, but go beyond that and brand them for the far left, for who they are, what they think, and because the opposition, because then America looks at you and it's like, oh, he wants to secure the border and improve the economy. Because those are his agenda items.
Yeah. Yeah. It will be really interesting to see. Will he apologize today or tomorrow? Will he apologize for the weekend?
I think he will.
Is somebody's campaign going to say, Joe, you can't win this. You have to apologize. Or you have to say, I apologize if anybody was, actually don't apologize.
Right.
You apologize if anybody was offended by your remarks.
That's what he did with Creepygate.
That weren't wrong.
I apologize if I made anyone feel uncomfortable, essentially was it.
Right.
It wasn't really a mea culpa at all.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on summer driving. Your truck can face operational challenges in warm weather, so it's important to have a maintenance plan in place to adapt. Brakes are an area that deserves special attention. Combining hot brakes with a road that's baked in the sun all day can cause the brakes to malfunction and increase the possibility of an incident. With heavier traffic and more drivers towing campers and boats during summer vacations, you may find yourself stopping or slowing more than usual on the highway. Slow down and give yourself more space between the vehicle ahead of you. Not only will you be safer, but you can save your brakes in the process. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So I see that de Blasio tweeted in response to Biden's comments saying, it's 2019 and Joe Biden is longing for the good old days of civility typified by James Eastland. Eastland thought my multiracial family should be illegal. Mm. Whoa.
Mm-hmm.
Representative John Delaney of Maryland, evoking an avowed segregationist is not the best way to make the point. We need to work together and is insensitive. We need to learn from history, but we also need to be aggressive in dismantling structural racism that exists today. Every other candidate is going to be asked about this, and if Biden doesn't apologize and say, I was wrong and my relationship with them was wrong,
right,
this has to come up. Here's the point.
Kamala Harris will be on the same stage with Biden.
Yeah, so
in that first debate, right?
Will this come up, or will MSNBC just ignore it?
It has to come up. It has to come up. It will. Because I don't think the far left and far left media care whether Joe, in fact, they probably prefer that he's not the nominee. Or do they believe he's the only one that can beat Trump, and do they sit on it? Wow.
Disturbing on so many levels. Eric Hartley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric. I'm Gary, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour for Freightliner, Run Smart, helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal. We podcast every day. If you miss a show, you miss part of a show, please go back. You can podcast. What you need to do is download the app. What are you doing? Download the app. Very simple. Go to Google Play Store. Go to the Apple Store and download the app, Red Eye Radio, and then you can listen whenever you want to listen. You can go back and listen to, again, a podcast, or you can listen to us live on the app. Lots of people out there doing. My buddy Jeff, who is a truck driver up in the Boston area, big Patriots fan. And it's hard to boo the Patriots, though, because they have so many wins.
I'm a Bills fan.
That's
not
right.
Hard
you can
at all.
You can boo everybody, though. That's the whole
That's
thing. You get to boo
That's
everybody else.
Point,
yeah. So, but it's really great having all of our friends out there listening to us on the app, and of course, all of our great stations all across the country that we're so grateful to have on board as part of the Red Eye family. But please check out our podcast, check out our app, download the app, share it with friends, too. The Extra Mile podcast as well, talking about a number of things, regulations, ELDs, hours of service, life behind the wheel, events, and much more on the Extra Mile podcast. That's part of the great podcast family here at Red Eye Radio. So truckers, please check out the Extra Mile podcast and share that one as well. You can get more information at redeyeradioshow.com.
Okay, first Joe Biden.
All right,
okay,
what do you got?
I found some audio. Okay, first right. Joe Biden. Here we go. Okay.
He knows better. There's not a racist bone in my body. I've been involved in civil rights my whole career, period.
And that was Biden in response to Cory Booker criticizing him for his statements at that fundraiser.
He knows better. And at a time when Donald Trump never apologizes for anything and starts to create that kind of, I think, toxic sentiment that you never apologize, never apologize, never apologize. I know Joe Biden. He's better than this. And this is a moment where he should have spoken to the issue, allowed everybody to learn from it and move on.
Yeah, but this is clear evidence when you talk, again, remember the accusations against Trump being a racist. Mm-hmm. There's much more in just those words that Biden has said over the last 24 hours.
Yeah.
Kamala Harris, you had brought her up, that she's going to be on the same stage as Biden. She had this to say.
I have a great deal of respect for Vice President Biden. He's done very good work, and he has served our country in a very noble way. But to coddle the reputations of segregationists, of people who, if they had their way, I would literally not be standing here as a member of the United States Senate, is, I think, it's misinformed and it's wrong. I appreciate the importance of working with people and finding common ground. But to suggest that individuals who literally made it their life's work to take America back on the issue of race is a real problem for me.
There you go. By the way, it's not misinformed.
No, it is not.
Biden is not misinformed.
He's been around a long time. Yeah. He's had many years to consider this. And still hasn't changed. That's not misinformed. Did they ever say Trump was misinformed when they were calling him a racist?
No. All right. No. Now he's Hitler because of concentration camps.
Right. Which aren't concentration camps.
Which are,
Yeah. But it's, but you know, it's, it is that everyday attempt to make him Hitler.
That was gap number one. Gap number two, former Vice President Joe Biden told wealthy donors at a Tuesday evening fundraiser that he does not want to demonize wealth because he finds rich people are just as patriotic as poor people.
Oh.
Remember, I got into trouble with some people on my team on the Democratic side because I said, you know, what I found is that rich people are just as patriotic as poor people. See, he got in trouble, but he's repeating it. Not a joke. I mean, we may not want to demonize anybody who has made less money. We can disagree in the margins, but the truth is, the truth of the matter is, it's all within our wheelhouse, and nobody has to be punished. No one's standard of living will change. Nothing would fundamentally change. End of quote. That, to me, is a hit right at AOC.
Yeah, right.
Because what does she wish to do? She wants to fundamentally transform the country. That's what the majority of the Democrats running for president wish to do. And he is saying there's not going to be any fundamental change when it comes to the rich.
Yeah.
Sorry, you can't say that as a Democrat.
No. No, you cannot. You sound like Mitch McConnell when you're saying that.
This is going to be fun. I mean, this is going to be fun. This is really going to be a fun time. It really will be interesting to see because now every single Democrat candidate will be asked about his love of segregationists.
Yeah.
And is wishing to cooperate with racist and segregationist from his own mouth. And as National Review points out, not once, not just at that fundraiser, but many times before.
Yes. Yep.
But that is really the question, though. Will it be brought up at the debates next week? Because
it has to be. If there's not a real reversal or apology, it has to be. Now, the question is, and you asked the question at the bottom of the hour. So, Rachel Maddow bring that up? I think she does, actually. I think she does.
Now, if he gives the apology non-apology that he did for Creepy Gate,
yeah.
If you were offended by what I said, I'm sorry.
Right.
You're not apologizing for what he said. He's apologizing if you were offended by it.
Yeah, the problem is you're offended.
Right.
I didn't do anything wrong, but if you're offended, then I apologize being offended.
Look, you've got to. There are people. I'm telling you right now, there's advisors to Kamala Harris right now saying this is your golden moment.
Yeah.
If you want a moment in which to attack Joe Biden, and as she said there, you know, they would not have accepted me. I wouldn't be in the U.S. Senate. If she wishes to be president of the United States and she thinks she has a chance, you have to go after that.
Yep. No way around it. No way around it.
Otherwise, you're Bernie Sanders giving up the podium to whoever wants it. Mm-hmm. You truly don't want. As we asked a couple times, I almost said last year. Boy, time's flying quickly.
Yeah, right.
But as we asked in 2015, 2016, we said, "Does he want to win?"
Right.
How many times did we say that about him? He gets to the point of, okay, this could be yours. Oh, I don't know. I'm really not going to be aggressive here.
Yeah, or do you do that or do you let the left do the work for you on something like this, at least in the meantime?
Well, I'm saying that for Kamala Harris because Cory Booker has already hit Biden.
Right. Kamala Harris said, in that interview, I think on stage she does, certainly she addresses it, because I think the point of the moderator would be, especially in the case of, the MSNBC moderators, would certainly be to point that out and bring it up while on stage with Kamala Harris, given her ethnicity and the makeup of her current family, which essentially would be the same point that Mayor de Blasio made.
Right.
I can see that happening.
Under Joe Biden's friends and mentors, my family would be illegal.
Right. There's your soundbite.
You want a soundbite that resonates?
Yes, exactly. Has something to it.
So if he just, will he inflame the AOC, Tlaib, Omar portion of the Democrat Party, which is controlling the Democrat Party now? Their influence is greater than any other influence in the Democrat Party. If he gives the apology, non-apology, will that even be worse than not apologizing?
Yeah, right.
I don't know. I mean, Biden, this is we've always talked about elections and how unique they are. The problem with Democrats right now is they view there's another what was the poll out there, the story out there saying that Democrats prefer an old white man.
You look at the poll numbers, right? Bernie and Biden leading still.
Here it is. Democratic voters want an older white guy.
Mm-hmm.
Democratic voters are reportedly favoring a white middle-aged man as their ideal candidate to beat President Trump. The USC Los Angeles Times poll conducted May 15th to June 15th among 5,000 eligible voters favored a white male aged 41 to 65. Okay, that does that mean that Bernie and Biden are out? Voters said they preferred a white candidate roughly 66% of the time, a male candidate roughly 70% of the time. Wow. And a Democratic candidate ages 41 to 65, roughly 75% of the time. 55% of voters said that Trump would probably or definitely beat Elizabeth Warren. There you go. So, I mean, where do they go? Because you know that the reason that Biden is leading is not because they love Biden. It's believe he is the one that can beat Trump. How long do they go? Look, they're pounding every day Trump on every single day on racism. You don't have any kind of evidence against Trump that he's a... They still bring back the Charlottesville thing.
Yeah, I was going to say, they have to make it up.
Right, even when the quote comes out over and 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 over again. The quote, when you look at read the quote, you go, oh no, he's being specific. He's talking about people that don't want they don't want to erase history with the Confederate things. He wasn't talking about the white supremacists out there. It was clear, and he made it clear in there. Didn't matter. That's still what he meant. Well, that's not what he meant.
No.
But when you see Biden, it's what he means.
And he's standing by it.
And he's standing by it and defending it. There's nothing to apologize for. Will be interesting to see what happens today and tomorrow as we head into the weekend, knowing that, and he knows, believe me, his campaign staff knows he's got to do so. Somebody in his campaign, maybe Biden, but somebody in his campaign is telling him, you have to do something before the debates last week. You cannot be on the stage in the first debate and be accused of being a segregationist and a racist or enabling a segregationist or a racist, because in 2019 in the Democrat Party, that makes you a racist.
Right.
It would make you a racist in the Republican Party, as we said.
Right.
If this was Trump running for office, this, I don't know what else could be as fatal as something like what Biden is doing right now.
Right. Especially standing by it.
Yep. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Oh, this is interesting.
Hmm?
This poll just out.
Yeah.
It's a Thursday poll, which means it just came out.
Yeah.
It had to come out after midnight. The Economist YouGov 2020 Democratic presidential nomination nationwide.
All right. What do we got?
Biden with only 26. I do not recall a national poll where he is polled that low. Warren at 16, Sanders 12, Buttigieg 9. So Warren in this poll has overtaken Bernie Sanders. And you made, when I read that to you during the break, you said, well, there's just no energy.
There's no energy with Biden.
No, with Sanders.
I mean, with Bernie. I don't see the energy with Warren. I don't see the point of her rising. But again, it could be a number of things, just, campaign stops and things that just aren't making the news for whatever reason. The only thing, if you think about it, really, in the broader news cycle, the only thing that is making the news about Warren is the fact that her numbers are going up. What I'm wondering is about what the fundamentals behind that. Bernie, we know there's no energy there with Bernie. There's really not a lot of energy with Biden except for the focus on Biden. You know, the people aren't showing up with energy. The people aren't showing up for Warren. So again, whoever it's going to be is going to have to carry the energy that the president right now clearly has with his campaign and rallies. And I don't know where that's going to come from. I don't know what that energy would be based on for any of them.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. Did Trump tweet on the Biden thing?
All right, hold on.
I didn't even check.
Yeah, I don't know. All right, let's go to the Donald Trump Twitter page news desk. This just in. Team coverage. All right.
The Twitter crew.
Yeah, I don't see anything about it.
The campaign has to say something today on it.
No,
they have to.
No collusion. Loser.
Winning.
Best ever. Fake news. No. Nothing.
Okay. The campaign has to.
Sean Hannity, nothing. Actually, there was. I'm going to be interviewed live tonight. That was yesterday by Sean Hannity, and so he was on Hannity. I'll have to see if he brought it up there. We'll go through the transcript to see if we can find something.
If you're a Democrat right now and you're running at 1 or 2 points, or even if you're a Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, whatever, because when you go back and you look at his history, and New York Magazine, for example, in an article back on March 12th, wrote, "Will black voters still love Biden when they remember who he was?" Let me just read a couple of paragraphs here.
Okay.
"Joe Biden once called state-mandated school integration the most racist concept you can ever come up with. And Barack Obama, the first sort of mainstream African-American who was articulate and bright and clean." That's a quote.
Yeah.
"He was a staunch opponent of forced busing in the 1970s, a leader a leading crusader for mass incarceration through the 80s and 90s. Uncle Joe has described African-American felons as predators, too sociopathic to rehabilitate, and white supremacist senators as his friends.
Hmm.
Now, this was March 12th. This just wasn't yesterday.
Right, okay.
And as of this writing, a plurality of black Democrats want him to be their party's 2020 nominee. Whether Biden can retain that support after voters learn more about his problematic past could very well determine the outcome of the party's primary race. To explore that question, let's pick through the former vice president's hefty baggage on racial justice. And then the case for thinking that Obama's halo will prove to be brighter than the shadow of Biden's record is dark.
Whoa. Huh. All right.
And he just goes through all of it, everything that he mentioned there. And, you know, and it's just, I mean, it's if you're right now, if you're, and look, we said this was going to happen. We said by the time you get to Biden's past, and that was the one point, I forgot how many months ago and when we made it, but it was when they kept talking about the Anita Hill hearings. Well, who get it for, he got a pass for Anita Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He got a pass there.
Yep.
I can't remember when we said it. I be honest with you, I can't remember if it was on or off the air. But I remember saying to someone, well, the Anita Hill thing isn't close to Biden's relationship in the 70s with the segregation of senators. And look, this is known. Anybody who's paid attention to politics knows this. That's why that New York Magazine article back in March was as clear as anything that anybody is stating today about Biden's comments, roughly 36 hours ago?
Hmm. Yeah.
That's why it's not a surprise to anybody who's paid attention.
Right.
And so we said it from the very beginning. When you start vetting Biden as a presidential candidate, when you have leftist candidates, extremely leftist candidates that make up the majority of the 20 that are running for president of the United States, how can you not attack that? Because you look as a hypocrite if you're going to call Trump a racist, Hitler, not say anything about AOC and the concentration camp remarks. If you're going to go out there and promote that Trump is a racist without the evidence to prove it, where you have the candidate that you're running against as a Democrat, that by the standard you have set for Trump is way more racist, based on the Democrat standard of what racism is,
mm-hmm.
the leftist version of racism, then you have to look at Biden and say, you have to be promoting the fact that not only will you attack him, but he is unqualified to be president of the United States.
Yeah.
And by the way, we've said this many times before because they have said Trump is unqualified, and one of the reasons is because Trump is a racist. If Trump is a racist based on the evidence or lack of evidence that you use to convict him as being a racist, then without question, it's not even a thought, Biden has to go.
Well, and it's, I don't know that an apology later today. Okay, imagine he goes to the podium. Not as spokesman, him. He goes to the podium. Not as a result of the media asking it during a campaign stop. He makes a deliberate effort to make a statement. I don't know on something like this that you reverse much of it because of the response, the initial response. That was actually, I think, the opportunity, and I think that is over. I think anything else, again, with the whole groping thing, and I don't know why, well, not groping, but it was boundary issues, hair sniffing incidents. That's something that, again, maybe it's because it didn't cross a certain line. I have no idea why they excuse that. And something like this, he had a clear opportunity to say, to reverse it, at least put spin on it and say, no, I don't condone the behavior, thoughts, and beliefs of those individuals. And that was a horrible time in our nation. And again, what you would normally hear. Well, that's not what happened. And I don't know how you, for a Biden, I don't know how you reverse that for the far left, how you make that good. I don't know that there's any apology here. I don't care who writes it. Well, I don't care how heartfelt it might come off. I don't know that you reverse it. I don't know how much damage is done, but I don't know that you can reverse this.
Ralph Northam survived the blackface scandal from mm-hmm. a college yearbook,
mm-hmm.
but there were a ton of Democrats calling for his resignation.
Yes. And, of course, he wasn't running for president.
He wasn't running for president.
Right.
I still laugh at the headline. He apologizes for the photo that he didn't take. He apologized for the photo but never claimed it was him. And
right.
The investigation couldn't identify whether it was him or not, but he's still apologizing.
Yeah, right.
I love that one.
Yeah. But if you look at something at the, okay, there's two, I guess, possible paths, and that is whether it's forgiven and does long-term damage or not. It could do long-term damage, but not enough damage to derail the campaign. It could be, and so there are more than two, but the other path is, we forgive it, we move on, because right now he's the guy that can beat Trump. And we need Trump gone more than we need Biden to be gone.
How many gaffes have there been in the first 3 weeks? And so he may be forgiven this week. We don't know whether it will come up in the debate last week if he apologizes. I can't see how it doesn't come up in the debate if he does not apologize.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He would have to reverse. Now, would he have to apologize twice? Would he have to apologize for his statement and then apologize
for the behavior then?
No. Apologize for the bad apology. Would he have to apologize for saying he won't apologize?
Right. Apologize for the behavior to begin with, and then apologize, which is, where I was going.
Apologize for not apologizing.
Yes.
For stating he shouldn't apologize. Does he have to give two apologies?
Well, then, and I'm guessing the whole Vanity Fair cover is off. That's not going to happen.
The reason we're focusing...
Has he apologized for being white yet?
Well, the reason... Biden? I don't believe so.
Okay.
We'll have to go back and check.
That may be necessary in this context. Part of it, right?
Yeah. The reason we bring this up is because if this was Trump, the media would be...
Stop the presses.
Stop the presses.
Breaking news.
Absolutely.
Team coverage. Hearings.
Yeah.
I mean, the hearings would begin.
Nadler would be on it.
Would have begun yesterday. it's the afternoon after lunch. Nadler would, we're going to reschedule and we're going to have a breaking news hearing. It would be nonstop by the media right now.
Okay, here it is, Kansas City Star, March 30th. O'Rourke, Biden, and apologizing for being a white male.
Okay. Right. Right. Because Okay, so I forget the exact words of Mayor Pete just a couple of days ago. It may have been from the weekend where he talked about it and basically was apologizing and, you know, for being a white guy and a number of things that the left and the candidates on the left believe that they have to apologize for. Look, it is the age of apologies, right? And Biden has had really no real apologies.
This one from March 3rd. Biden is remorseful for everything, especially for his role in the Clarence Thomas Supreme Court hearings long ago. Then chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Biden regrets the way that Anita Hill was treated, the tough questioning, and as I recall, a hostile environment.
Yeah.
All these white men and this lone black woman, as they say, it wasn't optically optimum. That's a tongue twister for me. Additionally, Biden is very upset at what he terms white man's culture.
Okay.
Referring to the environment in which women have been afraid to speak up in cases of sexual harassment.
Right.
And he views himself as part of, because of his Anita Hill, as part of the white men's culture that needs to apologize. So he hasn't apologized for being white specifically,
he's getting close.
Yes.
Yeah. He acknowledged that there could be a good reason to do that in the future. It's so stupid, but this is how the left operates. This is how they operate. Now, some of it does go back to behavior, and some of it goes back to, and of course, which is the whole hypocrisy thing. We all get that. But it's the nature of how it, like with a Mayor Pete, I mean, the whole, is he gay enough? O'Rourke, the rock star.
Kamala Harris, is she black enough because of her husband?
Exactly.
And by the way, this all comes from the left. This does not come from the
right. It's not from the right at all.
Not from us.
No.
Where we're simply reporting what others are stating on the left.
Right. And Kamala Harris on the other point of, she was involved in law enforcement. No.
We find that type of mindset reprehensible.
Yes. They're either qualified or they're not.
Yes.
We said it back in when Opie, Ron Howard, made the video, and it went on for, you know, the better part of 10 minutes about how it's time to have our first black president, and really never touched on the qualifications of the individual. And we said, man, if we were Obama or part of his campaign, hey, man, that's lovely, Ron, but could you go back and redo it and talk about the person and the
and what he can do for the country?
Yeah. You know, how about you look at the qualifications of the individual? That's how we think.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Just so you know, when I put in on Google, has Biden apologized for being white, and found that one article. But under that, Joe Biden under fire for segregationist senator remarks, Joe Biden's white privilege from Mother Jones. Yeah. So you're going to have, over the next couple of days, if he doesn't apologize for everything, I think this is something that you, I don't know how far it will go, but I can guarantee you that over the next day, the next 24 hours, you're going to have every single reporter asking every single Democrat candidate this question. What do you think about Biden? And you are going to have, I mean, Mother Jones, you can't get more liberal than Mother Jones.
Right.
And there they are, Joe Biden's white privilege.
Yep.
And I see this as being a big negative. Again, we looked at that one poll, and I don't know if that one poll is indicative of these statements or not, but It's the lowest I've seen Biden polling on a national scale, with 26% in the Economist YouGov poll that came out. Now, I don't know if it relates to this or whatever, or whether people are just getting tired of hearing him speak just for 3 weeks. I don't know.
Right. Yep.
But I really wonder, again, and we said this would happen, when you start vetting the top candidates and when you start vetting Biden, especially because of his past, we said this months ago, things will change in the polls. That's why we even said the other day, just 2 days ago, we said, look, everybody's making a big deal. They went from impeachment to Trump down in the polls, the internal polls, he's going to lose. We said way too early for that.
Here's your forecast.
Throughout most of the week, east of the Mississippi, we've seen showers, scattered thunderstorms, or showers connected with a frontal boundary. Rains will continue today from the lower Ohio Valley up into the Midwest and Northeast. Places like Knoxville, Tennessee, will start drying out later today, and that system will move on to the Northeast as the weekend approaches. Louisville, Cincinnati, Indianapolis, Columbus, Ohio, all set for showers today. Out west, things are dry, as is the desert southwest and southern plains. This is the last Thursday of spring 2019. So we've got a lot of spring showers for areas that have seen their share this week. Look for the risk of severe weather for the Carolinas, northern Georgia, including Atlanta, and most of PA, including the PA Turnpike throughout the day, where the risk of severe weather is probable. There's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
They're old white conservatives. Feel free to heckle them. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Breaking news over the Strait of Hormuz here within the last couple of hours. This story from Fox News. A U.S. high-altitude drone was shot down today by an Iranian surface-to-air missile over the Strait of Hormuz amid heightened tensions in the region after last week's attack on two oil tankers, a source told Fox News. Now, this is, you think of a drone, and, you know, we think of the little drones that, you know, that fly around and right. People play with all the time.
Right.
This is the U.S. Navy's MQ-4C drone. It has the same wingspan as a Boeing 737 and was over international airspace at the time, about 17 miles from Iran. Captain Bill Urban, U.S. Central Command spokesperson, declined to comment on the reported attack when it reached by Associated Press, but he said no drone was over Iranian territory. The Iranian news agency, the country's state-run news arm, identified the drone as an RQ-4 Global Hawk. Iran's Revolutionary Guard confirmed the shooting and said it occurred when the drone entered its airspace in southern Iran. The U.S. said Iran fired a missile at another drone last week that responded to attack on two oil tankers near the Gulf.
This is huge. Taking down a U.S. Military aircraft over international airspace. And, of course, the U.S. is going to be able to back it up in terms of proving that it was not in Iranian airspace. This is direct. This is blatant. This is nothing less than an attack on the U.S. It doesn't matter that the drone was unmanned, except for the fact that no lives were lost here. But it is, in terms of the attack itself and what it represents, it is huge and likely will get the immediate attention of the president and probably in the coming days.
Here's
of the UN.
Politically in the United States, here's what this changes. And this is something that you and I were going to talk about, even though it's not going to go anywhere in Congress. The House passed yesterday. The Democrats, I don't believe one Republican voted for it. But they passed as part of another bill to repeal the war authorization, the 2001 war authorization, which is how the president has been able to fight whoever the president is, whether it was Bush, whether it was Obama, whether it was Trump. That's why they can attack a lot of different places if they can tie it in to Al-Qaeda.
Mm-hmm.
If you can tie it into Al-Qaeda or a group that's associated with Al-Qaeda, the president has the ability to go after anything that happens worldwide.
Right.
And the belief from the Democrats was that they got from the White House is if the president responded to Iran's attack on the tankers, he was going to use that one. And a couple of articles yesterday brought up the back and forth between Rand Paul and Mike Pompeo when they were discussing this a month ago, I forgot what the timeline is, before even these tanker attacks occurred. And Rand Paul said, you can't do it under this. And he said, yes, we can, because Iran has been tied into Al-Qaeda.
Mm-hmm.
That takes that argument off the table. That's gone.
Right. Sure.
That's gone.
Yep.
Iran now has attacked a U.S. asset over international waters.
Yep.
Doesn't matter that it was a drone.
Nope.
And so now all bets are off as to what the president will do. It does look like, because, look, Iran, they're not stupid. And as you said, we're going to know absolutely where that drone was.
Yeah, right.
We're going to know absolutely where that drone was by the radar, by the military. U.S. saying it was over international waters.
Mm-hmm.
If it's over international waters and they attack it, the president doesn't need any authorization from Congress to attack back.
Right. The question is, what do you do here?
To retaliate.
Right.
And well, the other point is, Iran knows this.
Mm-hmm.
So Iran seems to be desperate for a United States military response.
Yes, they want retaliation.
They want, it's pretty clear now that they want U.S. retaliation.
This is different than a show of power. This is an act that is, you're right, deliberate, and the intention behind it is clear. Draw a response, but knowing what they believe, especially with this particular president, what they believe it will be a greater response. You take down one of our drones, we'll take down 10 of your fighter jets. You take out one of our drones, we take out one of your military sites for launching the missiles, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which could be the case. That actually would be, I think, a direct and appropriate response here. But then they will say this is they have provoked us into this war. And that they believe at that point, okay, it is all out war with the U.S. and Western interests. Any Western interests, anyone supporting the U.S. or working with the U.S. I mean, if you go back to the last two tankers that were just days ago attacked, that was Japan-related cargo on those tankers, and you had Prime Minister Abe actually in Iran at the time trying to make peace between Iran and the U.S. That was very clear. You're standing on, we see Japan as an ally of the U.S., not an ally for Iran, and that's not going to be tolerated. So we're taking out two of these tankers that have your country's interest in terms of cargo on board. And we're going to make that statement very clear. We don't have any interest in anyone who is a very clear and longtime ally of the U.S. This attack is very, very different.
Just so you know, looking at CNN, and CNN is saying that Iran claims to have shot down a U.S. drone, but they don't have... They don't have the same story as Fox, where Fox is telling them a source tells them that a U.S. source tells them, you know, that it was a drone over international waters. CNN doesn't go that far. This from Sky News: U.S. military drone shot down by Iranian missile, and then an American official unnamed U.S. Officials quoted by Reuters and Associated News agencies now. So now you have Fox, Reuters, and Associated Press saying that their sources inside the U.S. government now say that the drone was downed in international airspace over the Strait of Hormuz. So it's, we're now getting multiple stories with multiple sources.
NBC
government.
News, a U.S. drone was shot down in international airspace above the Strait of Hormuz on Thursday, a U.S. official said, contradicting a claim by Iran's Revolutionary Guard that it had shot down the aircraft after it entered that country's airspace. The U.S. official said that a surface-to-air missile hit the RQ-4 Global Hawk in international airspace above the strait. The official said U.S. officials consider it an unprovoked attack. The Revolutionary Guard said in a statement early Thursday that the U.S.-made Global Hawk surveillance drone was brought down by its force near the Kohi-e-Mubarak region, which sits in the central district of Jassk County after the aircraft violated Iranian airspace. The head of Iran's National Security Council said the country's airspace is its red line, and then would have been a and there would have been a firm response regardless of which country trespasses. Central Command spokesman Captain Bill Urban previously stated that, quote, no U.S. drone was operating in Iranian airspace today. So they're at least quoting one specific U.S. official here, and that is, again, Central Command spokesman Captain Bill Urban. So really not much wavering. There's not much difference in the story at all, but it seems to be confirmed based on what we're reading from a number of, five or six sources so far. And it will be easy
and this is
to prove that they were in international airspace.
And I'm looking at the drone right now. This is a big drone. Yeah. I mean, this thing is huge. Yeah. It has a wingspan of a 737, even though the body is not as big as don't look at it as a 737. The wingspan may be that wide.
Right.
But if you actually look at the drone itself, and I'm looking at a picture of it, the drone is probably, it looks like maybe 15 to 18 feet tall. And it's not as wide. You don't have a body, wide body where you can put people in. But it is a huge drone. It has a range of 9,400 miles, Eric.
Mm.
And I guess the speed it can go is roughly just under 400 miles an hour.
You know, what's interesting is that we had Acting Defense Secretary Patrick Shanahan announcing Monday that the Trump administration would send 1,000 additional troops to the region, and they're covering this here in the NBC News version of this morning's attack on the drone. But then they point out, and you and I didn't get a chance to get into that, but Shanahan stepped down Tuesday and withdrew his name from consideration for the cabinet position. And the president actually made that announcement. The president
because of domestic problems from 2010 and 2011,
right,
I believe.
Right. And the president said Secretary of the Army Mark Esper, a former Raytheon executive, will take Shanahan's place as acting defense secretary. But nonetheless, I mean, those were actions coming from clearly the commander in chief through the defense secretary on Monday, regardless of who was in that position. That was going to be the case, sending 1,000 troops over to that region. The question now is, what else do you do, given what has happened today, which elevates it to a whole new place?
Yeah, and as we've stated before, the reason it elevates it to a whole new space is this is not the United States coming to the protection of just other countries shipping in international waters.
Right.
This is a direct attack now on the United States. It's attacking a U.S. aircraft. Doesn't matter whether it's a drone or a jet, but attacking a U.S. aircraft in international waters, that is a direct attack and an act of war on the United States.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
Not just on international shipping. So it changes everything. And as you and I said, look, the United States is saying, the sources, this is over international waters. We're going to know if it was over international waters.
Yes, yeah.
And so that's not going to even be up for debate. The question would be, why would Iran do that? It's if Iran is so desperate at this point, they actually, somebody, whether it's the supreme leader, I can't tell you, but it looks like that they are egging for a fight. They want, it seems like, a military response from the United States.
Yes.
Otherwise, why would you do this?
Right.
Now, we told you that the surveillance over the Strait of Hormuz and the Gulf of Oman would once the Fifth Fleet got there, we said it's going to be massive, and they're going to be monitoring every tanker that goes by looking for more evidence. Well, we don't need that at this point because Iran has gone and hit an American aircraft. Mm-hmm. So it changes everything. And as we stated earlier, this comes on the day where the House and Democrats voted to repeal the 2001 War Authorization Act, which every president has used to attack anybody that had anything to do with Al-Qaeda. And this administration has already told Congress that they believe that they can use that to attack Iran because of Iran's relationship with Al-Qaeda. Well, that's blown out of the water now. That's not even an issue. Democrats cannot use that as an issue anymore because there's a direct attack now on the United States. It will be interesting to see how everybody responds as morning comes.
Associated Press just a few minutes ago, breaking: Revolutionary Guard commander, this one, says, while Iran has no intention of war with anyone, it's, quote, ready for war, end quote.
The story keeps updating. We'll have more coming up here. We'll be all over it with every single update for you. So sure. Hang on, more to come. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara. Looking at CBS News here, breaking news. A U.S. official says an Iranian surface-to-air missile shot down a U.S. drone flying in international airspace over the strategic Strait of Hormuz. An official spoke to the Associated Press and Reuters News Service Thursday on condition of anonymity, as the information has yet to be cleared for release. The word came after Iran's Revolutionary Guard said Thursday it had shot down a U.S. spy drone, though a different type, that was flying over Iran. But the U.S. military denied any of its aircraft were operating over Iran at that time. The U.S. official told Reuters the drone that was hit over the Strait of Hormuz was a U.S. Navy MQ-4C Triton, huge drone, wingspan of a 727, just so people know, or excuse me, a 737. The official didn't say when it happened. So the U.S. official apparently didn't say that it happened today. Iran is saying it happened today.
Okay.
So that's just, well
there was one spokesman that said there were no U.S. drones flying in Iranian airspace today. I don't know if that was, an acknowledgement that it happened today or not.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.